Welcome to the 'Cause I Love You podcast, a series of conversations designed to convene faith, civic, and nonprofit leaders in and around Colorado Springs. We want to foster greater collaboration between faith and civic partners so the church can be our city's greatest contributor towards human flourishing. Each month, we explore topics and struggles impacting people in the Pikes Peak region and connect you to the leaders that are working to end suffering and increase flourishing.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to our first ever 'Cause I Love You podcast. I am your host, Stu Davis. I am joined by my trusty, smart, and somewhat hipsterish counterpart, Corey Smith. Hello, Corey.
Hello, Stu. How are you?
I'm doing so great, and I'm so excited to be doing this for the very first time. Corey, why are we doing a podcast?
Stu, you know this, but we work really hard to get people in the room together, united. So we're talking pastors, city officials, business leaders, all kinds of people that want to work together for the good of the city. But as you also know, COVID.
Right.
So that's been really tricky. It's gotten much harder to fill a room up with people who want to be united and work together. So we thought with the 'Cause I Love You podcast, can we take the content that we would talk about to them in their own space?
Yeah,
so that's the heart.
That's so good. And we also know that it's not always easy to get everyone's schedules to line up where we can all be together in a room together. So these podcasts are a great way to just bring the content to busy leaders on their schedules. So with all of that, here we are in our first episode. Corey, what are we actually going to talk about today?
You know, something I hear you say a lot, Stu, and I think it's a good way to frame these conversations. When we talk about our role in the city, when we talk about 'Cause I Love You and our role in the city, we often say we sit at the intersection of church and city. And I think that's a good framing, just statement. We sit at the intersection of faith and city.
Yeah, and that's really kind of a way of creating these collaborations, these opportunities for intersections between groups of leaders who often want to do the same things, but they may not naturally cross over with each other. When you think about it, you know, city leaders, church leaders, in many ways, they want the same thing. They want to build a better community. They may do it from slightly different motivations, but it's not like, you know, I'm going this way and you're going that way. We're actually all trying to get to a common destination where hungry people are fed, where sick people find healing, where people who are homeless maybe find shelter, where all kinds of injustices are eradicated. So we can just create platforms that allow us to work alongside each other. And that's really a lot of the idea here.
Yeah, that's so good. Well, and the thing, you know, you just mentioned it, but platforms, that's something that we've been talking about a lot at 'Cause I Love You, specifically with our friend and mentor, Eric Swanson, who works in city transformation. He talks a lot about platforms, and he talks about how can 'Cause I Love You be a platform in our city? So much like something like a Facebook or an Uber or an Airbnb, how can we use that concept to bring to city transformation? Can you talk a little bit about that, Stu?
Well, I will certainly do my best, but trying to, you know, repeat or regurgitate anything that Eric says is a tough task. And certainly we're going to link to Eric's website in the show notes here. But to be fair, like, he's not the first or the only one to apply this idea of platform thinking to a theological or a sociological context, but he does talk about it a lot. And the idea is that platforms are a business model that invites collective input without actually owning any assets in and of itself. The platform just creates the opportunity for that interaction to occur. So if you think about it, think about like Uber or Lyft. They don't own any vehicles, but they're the world's largest providers of services to move people in vehicles. Airbnb, it doesn't own any real estate, but it's the world's largest provider of helping people find a place to stay. Facebook doesn't really produce much in the way of content, but it provides a platform that invites others to produce terabytes of content every single day. Each of these are their platforms. They don't own much in the way of assets, but they create spaces or opportunities, or what we're calling platforms, for people to kind of select in and find what they're looking for. So Eric's concept is that city transformation movements like 'Cause I Love You, it can be a platform or an opportunity for churches or businesses or nonprofits or even other types of organizations, or frankly, even just groups of people, that they can all get on board and start moving our city forward together.
Yeah, that's really good. And if you take that concept and apply it to 'Cause I Love You and think about how we can be a platform for our city, that's pretty mind-blowing. If we put that into context, I think that could be really powerful. So we're talking about city transformation. This is our very first podcast episode. We're so excited that you're listening with us. And we felt like it was really important before we start diving into all kinds of challenges that we face in our community to start at a high level. So we rolled out the red carpet for one of our favorite local celebrities to chat with, Mayor John Southers. He's an important partner to 'Cause I Love You and has been for years. And so we're excited to just dig in, chat with him. This is a really important conversation.
Yeah, totally. And it's the best place to start our podcast series, Connecting Faith Leaders to the City. I mean, a lot of our listeners will remember that back in 2015, we had our very first gathering of local pastors at a restaurant downtown. We invited Mayor Southers to just help us put our fingers on the pulse of our city. And two important things happened to that meeting. The first was that he was very real and authentic and genuine. In fact, he actually got a little bit teary on the stage, which for me, at least, was one of the few times, if I've ever seen that before. I've not seen it much. But he was talking about the impact of his own journey through adoption as a young child. And second, he called the pastors in the room to collective action at a single specific initiative, helping to fund the Springs Rescue Mission's expanded emergency shelter. And by giving us that single point of focus, Corey, 55 of the 80 pastors in that room walked out with a vision for working alongside each other and alongside our city to help address the issues that at the time was really a part of our city's most kind of visible human crisis. So we're back here with Mayor Southers again, and this was such a good conversation to just find out what and where as churches and leaders we can do to collectively work together. So I know I enjoyed this conversation. Just being in the room with him is a privilege every time. I enjoy his perspective, and I hope that our listeners enjoy this conversation as much as I did. So let's take a listen. Well, hello, Colorado Springs faith leaders. Welcome to the 'Cause I Love You podcast. This podcast is about creating intersections between the church and the city and finding ways to help our faith community and its leaders lean in to what's happening in our community and to take action. And I have with me someone today who has always welcomed the participation of our local faith community in addressing local issues, the Honorable Mayor John Southers. Mr. Mayor, thank you for taking time to speak with us again.
Well, thank you, Stu, for the opportunity.
It's really great for us to be able to have this conversation. And Mayor, I know, you know, a lot of our audience probably knows some things about you, but they may not know you. They've maybe had an opportunity to see you in public, perhaps be in an event that you've spoken at or at some point, but they've never had a chance to perhaps spend time with you. And I know you and I have had a few opportunities to spend some time together. And one of the things that I admire about you on a personal level is your priority around your family. So can you just tell us a little bit about your family, your two daughters, and why that's such an important part of your priority in your professional life?
Sure, I'd be glad to. Stu, I got some advice very early in my life that the key to happiness is three things. Someone or someone's to love, something meaningful to do, and something to look forward to. Decades and decades later, I'm going to be 70 next October. I think that's probably the best advice I ever got. And I think a key to my being as successful as I have been in public life is the balance that I have because of my personal life. I've privileged to be married to Janet, my wife, going on 45 years next May. That brings a certain stability to your life, and she looks out for me, keeps me well grounded. Keeps us making sure we have a wealth of social life, not just in politics, not just in the city, in a whole variety of things. We have two fantastic daughters. Our daughters are Allison and Kate, both incredibly well-educated, astute citizens of our country. They're great mothers. We have a couple of, each one has a grandchild. We've got one boy, one girl grandchild. And I derive a lot of of my happiness from my personal life. And it certainly helps give me the kind of balance that you need to navigate some of the challenges in life.
Yeah. You know, we've had this conversation before, but as the dad of teenagers and two daughters myself, I really admire the fact that you have highly capable, well-educated, very motivated, as you said, astute citizens for your two daughters. One is an officer in, I believe, the Navy. Is that correct?
One's a commander in the Navy, and the other one's a deputy district attorney in Denver. That's correct.
Yeah, so just before we get into the meat of the conversation around our community, as a father, you know, how do you stay connected to your adult daughters in the midst of what I know is obviously a very busy life, both for you and for them?
Well, we, I, you know, I'm not even sure what we're doing now. So are we FaceTiming or what do we do every Sunday? All I know is I see them on a screen and I see our grandkids and we talk and all that sort of thing. Obviously we see the our daughter and granddaughter in Denver a lot more than we do, the one in Maine. But we communicate, visually, mm-hmm. at least once a week and sometimes during the week when an issue comes up and things like that. But they always know we're here for them. We really enjoy finding out exactly what's going on in their lives day to day and things like that. So we stay in real close touch.
Well, it certainly gives me something to aspire to as I watch my own two daughters growing up. Let's get into what we're talking about here today with regard to our city. So, Mayor, you've graciously accepted invitations that we've had to speak at gatherings of leaders. You know, we've gotten people into a room together over the last few years. We had our first one back in 2015. If you remember, we were at the Phantom Canyon downtown. That was just a great launch to what's become a tradition over the last several years. The last one you spoke at was in January 2020, about a year before this recording that we're sitting here right now. And that was just, frankly, a few weeks before the outbreak of COVID-19 and all of the things that have happened. So can you just describe a little bit about how your priorities have shifted as mayor of Colorado Springs over the course of the last few years?
Well, the COVID epidemic has caused them to shift fairly significantly. The city has had to deal with COVID and its impacts in a couple of respects. Number one, while I'm not the health agency, the El Paso County Health Department is, I've had to work with the local health department, the state health department, very closely with the governor to see if we can – what we can do to make sure our citizens stay as healthy as we can and our economy stays as healthy as it can. And that's been a big job. We've had to had a lot of back and forth about what kind of restrictions. I talk to the governor every Tuesday at 4 o'clock. So I'll talk to him this afternoon at 4 o'clock. And we used to talk about just COVID issues. I would express my opinions about whether restrictions were too much, too little, whatever. Now, of course, we're moving into vaccinations. But so the health, safety, and welfare of our citizens has been the principal focus. But obviously, I also have responsibility for making sure that the city stays economically afloat. And quite frankly, in March and April of last year, that didn't look like it was going to be that easy. Our revenues were down 14% in March, 23% in April. And we were modeling for potential across-the-board losses, sales, and use tax of about 30%, $110, $120 million. So we immediately took some steps when we saw those revenue losses. We imposed a hiring freeze. We wound up the year with about 200 fewer employees than we had at the beginning, out of about 2,500 employees. We deferred all major capital expenditures, anything possible that we could defer, and that was probably $10, $15 million in capital projects. We cut each department's operational budget about 2.5%. So we were preparing for a big hit. But something very fascinating happened, and I think it's a real testament to the resiliency of Colorado Springs. When it's all said and done, I'm quite confident that we will statistically prove ourselves to be one of, if not the most economically resilient major cities. Here's how it happened. Number one, construction. That was an essential government function. And so despite the pandemic of 2020 and all the repercussions, we had, believe it or not, a record-breaking commercial construction year and a record-breaking residential construction year. Obviously, we had these huge commercial projects, Amazon at the airport, 4 million square feet, new Hibble Sports Medicine Center, a downtown stadium, a downtown arena at the Colorado College campus. You just look around. There's hotels going up, lots of commercial construction. Then you had a record number of residential housing permits in the midst of this pandemic. Now, every single one of those people that is moving into a new house is buying furniture. They're buying landscaping and all that sort of thing. The other thing was online purchasing. I actually believe that when it's all said and done, we're going to find that people actually – obviously, the people that were employed and the vast, vast majority remained employed, they actually bought more in 2020 than they otherwise would have because a lot of them were staying at home, online, buying things and stuff like that. And so let me give you an example. I can't mention a specific taxpayer, but there's a major online retailer. Everybody will figure this out. Who in November of 2019, we collected $360,000 in sales tax, or they did, and passed it on to the city. That same retailer in November 2020 collected $1.2 million in sales tax. So the bottom line was by the summer, we were back to, you know, the same levels that we had revenue that we had in 2019. And then as we moved into the fall, September, October, November, and December, we surpassed it by some fairly significant numbers. December, retail was down nationwide just a little bit. It was up 10%. The entire sales tax and use tax was up 10% in Colorado Springs in December. So we're finishing the year despite that shaky set outset. We're finishing the year at 0.45 up over last year. Now, if you take into account lodging and rental tax, which was down 45% and some other revenue streams, our overall revenues can be down $10 to $12 million. But that's nothing compared to what we thought we were looking at last March and April.
Unless I'm mistaken, Mr. Mayor, you know, even with, as you mentioned, the LART tax, lodging and rental, being down, it still wasn't as down for us locally as it was in many other communities because we've had a strong outdoor recreation focus in our tourism.
Yeah, tourism generally across the country was down 60%. It was down 40% in Colorado Springs. We actually think it's probably the best tourism economy in the country despite being down 40%.
We just lost less.
That's right.
Than so many others did, yeah. Well, so I know that you spent a lot of time, you and I have had conversations. This has, again, been part of our conversations at events in the past about policy issues. We've spent time over the years talking about things like stormwater, infrastructure issues in different parts of the city. But I want to talk for a second about issues that might be affecting people in our community. What are some of the things that, as mayor, are concerning you in that particular arena?
Well, right now, my concern about people causes me to want to get everybody vaccinated as soon as possible. I have a weekly conference with the health department and there are about 12 providers now. I think that will increase to 15, 16 in the next week or so that are providing vaccinations. And we're working as hard as we can to make sure, number one, we get our fair share from the state, our population proportionate share. And that was an issue, frankly, a couple weeks ago. We are now getting our proportionate share and making sure we're getting them in arms as soon as possible. And we do it in a very egalitarian way that everybody's got access to them if you're in the category that's up for, you know, for vaccinations at the particular time. And I think we're I feel good about where we are right now. We had 25,000 vaccinations come into the city last week. Our proportionate share was 9,000, but the state's trying to make up for a little bit of a shortfall out of the gate. And people can now get them, obviously, if they're in a database with one of the hospitals or a clinic, they'll get notice when their age group comes up and things like that. But you can now call Safeway. You can now call King Soopers. The next week, you'll be able to call Walmart. And in a matter of weeks, you'll be able to call Walgreens and CVS. We're doing drive-up clinics. We're going to have some pop-up clinics in the Southeast area this weekend. So they're really, you know, if your age has come up, there's really no excuse for not getting in and getting vaccinated. The other thing I'm trying to do is convince everybody that they should. Believe it or not, about 30-35% of people say they don't want to get vaccinated. And I think they're spending too much time on social media and things like that. This is proving itself to be a very safe vaccination. And hopefully as more people get it, the word will get around and we'll get as deep a penetration as we need to get that herd immunity. Now, after that, obviously helping the businesses that have been adversely impacted. And those tend to be small retailers and particularly restaurants. They've gotten some avenues for aid through the federal government, but we've also made sure that we've had some local programs that they could take advantage of. Right now, restaurants can take advantage. If we know you've had a loss as a result of your sales tax activity, we're giving you a sales tax rebate going forward. So keeping the economy afloat, all that sort of thing is making sure people we preserve as many jobs as we can and things like that.
Yeah. We're going to go off script for just a second, but let me add just an addendum to that question, a secondary question. I can imagine that there are, again, we're, you know, talking with, and these episodes are really pointed towards faith leaders in our community. And a lot of them, pastors of local churches who might be fielding calls, questions from folks in their neighborhood, perhaps even in their congregations who have really had a hard time over the course of this last year and trying to figure out how to get themselves back on their feet. Is there anything the city is doing from either a policy perspective or perhaps some other initiative that's really trying to address some of those folks that are, whether it's an unemployment situation or it's just some other kind of area of struggle that our local faith leaders could point people towards?
Yeah. Stu, the city, unlike other levels of government, doesn't have entitlement programs or anything like that. So the county runs the social services, food stamps, all that kind of stuff. The state, obviously, and then the federal government is obviously in a whole bunch of different programs. So our job really is to try and keep businesses afloat that employ the people that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And if you're unemployed, you go to the state for unemployment compensation, things like that. But the city's job is really to try and create a business environment where businesses can prosper and keep people employed.
Yeah, that's really helpful. So one of the terms that, as an organization at Because I Love You, that we find ourselves talking about more and more these days as it relates to our community is this idea of flourishing, finding ways to help people and to our community to flourish or to thrive. In your opinion, Mr. Mayor, what would a flourishing Colorado Springs look like?
Well, I think I probably share this view with most citizens about what a flourishing city looks like. Number one, everybody has adequate housing. Everybody has employment opportunities that fit their skill set and their educational level and things like that. Making sure that for those that can't afford, market rate housing, that there's some affordable housing available. And the city works pretty hard at that. We are not in the housing business ourselves per se, but we have access to a lot of federal funding. We can put people in access to state funding through the Colorado Housing Authority and things like that. And I set a goal a couple years ago, Stu, in my State of the City address of creating about 1,000 new affordable housing units a year. Mm-hmm. We're not quite there yet, but we're getting really close. I think this year we'll probably put about 750 new units. And we know in the pipeline for next year, there's probably about 800 or so. And that number's up from an average of about 500 a year. So we're moving the right direction. And it's important, you know, I obviously want to go out and recruit the right kind of companies here that have well-paying jobs and things like that. But it can't just be a matter of getting jobs for people with expertise in software engineering or expertise in cybersecurity or something like that. The healthcare fields. Yep. That's why I feel good about companies like Amazon. You know, those are going to be lower skill jobs, if you will. But there's going to be a lot of them. And, you know, they start at $15, $16 an hour, things like that. I think that's you need a full array of employment opportunities for
and
people.
And there's going to be a lot of people to fill up that building. That's
absolutely. I think it'll start with 1,500. My guess is before it's all over, probably 2,500.
Yeah, for anybody who maybe hasn't had the chance to drive by the airport and see it, I mean, it is a massive facility, that's for sure. So housing, employment, and a variety of employment opportunities. Anything else that you would add to kind of from a city perspective?
Well, you want all segments of the population to be able to enjoy what a fantastic city this is. Mm-hmm. In other words, make a living, have adequate housing and things like that, and then be able to, recognize and realize why this is one of the best places in the country to live. It's the outdoor recreational opportunities. We've got 74% of our population within 10 minutes of a park, walking distance of a park. Our goal is to make sure is to get to 100%. We're much above the national average, but we want people to enjoy our parks and our outdoors and our recreational opportunities.
Yeah. And I know, you know, a sense of connectedness, I think, is something that comes up quite a bit, even in things like Plan COS and some of the other kind of macro level strategic initiatives that the city's taken on. So that's really great. So, as we look at the city, as you look around, again, kind of having this larger macro level perspective, kind of that 30,000 foot view, are there areas that come to mind related to our city, to the different pockets of our communities, where that nonprofits, businesses, government leaders could collectively do better than perhaps they could through their own individual efforts?
Stu, you and I have talked about this through the years, and I think it's been a theme with some of my discussions in the faith community. A lot of these problems we're tackling are fairly large, and they're best tackled at scale, if you will. So, for example, you know, I appreciate individual congregations wanting to supply food to homeless or something like that. Frankly, we found that's most effective that we support the organizations that are able to do that at scale, the rescue mission, the Marion House, things like that. The homeless know where those facilities are. They're able to access them. And I think, frankly, we get more bang for the effort and the buck when we do things at scale. Same things with affordable housing. Some of the church groups are starting to now get into affordable housing. I think they'll realize that combining their efforts is probably going to lead to more success. And I think that churches, when they combine their efforts, can probably raise more money to apply to a problem than individual congregations going out and now I don't want to demean at all. Mm-hmm. As you know, so much charity takes place on a one-to-one basis and things like that. That's not what I'm talking about. Yep. Be kind to your fellow man.
Yep.
Take care of the people around you. All that sort of thing. But I'm just saying, when you were talking about addressing some of the major social issues, systemic issues that we face, collective efforts are oftentimes more productive than individual congregational efforts and things like that.
So along that avenue, how would you suggest, if a church is thinking about, or perhaps let's not limit it to church, if we have a faith-based business leader who really has a particular heart or passion for a specific issue, you know, you've just mentioned here housing and homelessness, but we also have issues related to perhaps, you know, immigration, foster care, poverty, which, you know, homelessness is one small segment within that umbrella. How would you suggest one of those faith leaders to try and get involved? Maybe just dip their toe in the water and just find out where they can get a start.
Yeah, I think first of all, they need to get with people that are closest to that issue. People like Stu Davis or something who has a background. They know who the providers are. They know where people with socioeconomic challenges are going to get that particular service. They know who's dealing with immigrants. They know who's and find out, you know, talk to the experts, find out what the issues are, what sort of resources they need, and then dive in. And let me tell you, I've seen that happen over and over again. I have a good friend, Stu, that you probably know that early on when I was first becoming mayor, that he said, I want to get involved in homelessness. And I, you know, directed him to the rescue mission. And he is now a very, very major donor in that area. And I think it was just a matter of finding out who knows, you know, what the issues are and how it's best impacted. And there are people in this town, and if anybody ever asks me, you know, who do I talk to, I typically can start steering people the right direction to who is knowledgeable about that particular issue and can inform you as to how you can be most impactful.
Yeah, and I think that's, I mean, you know, certainly to say nothing of other communities around the country. I live here. I spend a lot of my time thinking and focusing on the relationships that are happening here. We have a wonderful landscape of experts who are sharp and compassionate and are very capable of delivering, again, systemic resources to address some of these systemic challenges. And as you said, to say nothing of the ability for us to just individually care one-on-one for a neighbor, however we would classify that person, that neighbor, there are some of these systemic challenges. And oftentimes, the answer is not to just multiply efforts by, you know, handing more neighbors a sandwich, or perhaps those can be good things. But if people are really wanting to address some of these systemic challenges, we've got great leaders, great resources here at our community that are just looking for more hands to be able to apply to the issue.
I've seen it time and time again, and I'm always impressed how creative people can be and how visionary they can be.
Well, Mayor, I'm always grateful for the time to be able to spend together. I want to just wrap up by asking you a question. Just, I know that you've had this heart for the last couple of years to be a great ancestor. You've written a book on it. I would love for you to just talk about that concept just for a couple minutes as we kind of close out here.
Hey, look, depend upon what your spiritual orientation is. You probably are goal is to save our soul and enjoy life after death, whatever. But I would suggest to people that they think in terms of the productivity of their life, bringing meaning and purpose to their life. And one of the ways to do that is think of yourself as an ancestor, because you will be an ancestor. Whether you have your own children or anything else, you're going to be an ancestor. And the question is, are you going to be a good one? Or are you going to be a bad one? And everything we do is not for the good. We all know who our bad ancestors have been. And the fact of the matter is, you know, there's two types of good ancestor. Most of us have to be content with impacting our family members, the people we work with, the people we go to church with, you know, a relatively small circle of people. And we impact them every day by the attitude we bring to our endeavors, by, you know, teaching them, sharing our values, things like that. And then a few of us, and I think I count myself lucky enough to be one of those that has the opportunity to be involved in some activities that broadly impact people. Mm-hmm. I think if we would stay focused on, you know, what do I need to do to be considered by those I leave behind as having been a good ancestor, I think it gives some direction to your life.
And frankly, Mr. Mayor, that's a lens through which our city's founders saw themselves.
Oh, there's no question that William Palmer, who we're really celebrating this year, he founded the city 150 years ago. You know, William Palmer was a developer, and I remind all the people that write me nasty letters about developers. He was a developer, and he made a lot of money. But a good developer also has a view towards what am I leaving behind and what am I doing for future generations? And I try and impress that on our current day developers. It's, yes, it's making money, but it's also leaving a community behind that we're really proud of. And so, I just encourage people to think about themselves in that line. What am I doing to impact the people immediately around me and some of the broader areas that I have to impact people? And am I being a positive influence?
Yeah. Well, Mayor, I'm so grateful not only for the time that we have spent here just in the last few minutes, but for the role that you've played in leading our community through what has been a very turbulent year, unquestionably, but really, frankly, a fairly turbulent few years that you've been in office. And I know that you're a man of faith, and there are many who are listening to this conversation who share that. And I think we'd just be blessed to know if there's any way that we could pray for you and your wife, Janet, in the coming months.
Well, please do. I need all the prayers that I can get, and I would ask your individual prayers, your congregational prayers. This is a tough job, Stu. I think I've prepared myself pretty well for tough jobs. I've been in the public arena for a long time, and I've faced a lot of tough issues. But being mayor of a big city is not an easy job, and certainly don't make all the people happy all the time. And I'm just happy to make some of them happy some of the time. So,
well, that's great. So we will do that. And let me just close by saying this. I mean, you've heard it here from Mayor John Southers, and we're so excited to see what we can take from this conversation and do collectively to help create a flourishing city in Colorado Springs. If you're interested in going deeper on issues that are affecting our city, there actually is a city podcast that's released every other week, every 2 weeks. We're going to have a link to that podcast in our show notes. And for all of you who are listening, we want to invite you to come back each and every month as we explore areas of community life where we can collectively invest and make a difference. So if you think about it, pass this podcast along to anyone that you know that's interested in this discussion. Certainly, you can look up the city's podcast on their website, and we'll look forward to seeing you next month at the intersection of the church and the city. Well, that was such a good interview. Like I said before, it's always a privilege to be able to spend time with Mayor Southers, and just the relationship that we've been able to develop with, not just him personally, but with his office, some of the folks that we get a chance to work with in our city and county offices, has just produced a lot of really good fruit. And so I'm excited to continue those kinds of conversations. But for now, Corey, I think we need to flip the page. We need to talk about what's next for 'Cause I Love You. And I think in order to do that, we need to just let people know about an additional team member that we have here with us. So, Corey, who do we have with us today?
Yes, I am so thrilled to introduce everyone to our friend and newest team member, Dorothea Mapp. Hi, Dorothea.
Hi, Corey. Hello, everyone.
It's so good to have you with us, Dorothea. You are a gifted leader. You're a gift to our team. You've been with us now for a couple of months. I would love for you to just share with everyone, what is your role at 'Cause I Love You? What are you doing here?
I am so excited to be here. I feel like I get the privilege of the position that I'm in unifying our cities with some of the organizations in our community and also the churches. And that's through the 'Cause I Love Schools program, which I am so excited to be a part of. I see 'Cause I Love You as a kind of matchmaking organization where we match businesses and churches with schools who want to do the same thing. I don't ever remember hearing of anyone saying that they don't want to help young people. Mm-hmm. They don't want to be a part of a young people's growing up and those things. So I get to ask the church, what would you like to do? And I get to ask organizations, what would you like to do? And then I get to go to schools and say, this is what we would love to do for you. How can we serve you? And they get to tell us what's on their hearts. There we meet with principals and teachers and that. And then we get to make things happen through 'Cause I Love Schools.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. And I love your heart for students and families and schools.
100%.
And I'm just excited. There's more coming. So I want you to share a little bit about, you know, hey, we've got an event coming up, Cause I Love Schools Day. What is that all about?
We do. Cause I Love Schools Day is this year, May 1st, 2021. And it is actually one day that we have set aside for churches and organizations to gather after being matched with the school, either in their local area or other parts of the city, and they come together and they work on a project together. So we have different churches and organizations who will go to a school and they may paint for the school. They may refurbish a teacher's lounge. They may pluck weeds in the yard, and we have set aside this time to do that. May 1st. This year, and if anyone would love to join us, an organization or a church, they can just give us a call or an email. They can email me at info@causeiloveyou.com.
So, Dorothea, I want to go back a little bit to the initiative. You know, we kind of talk a lot about listening well to our city leaders, just like we did with Mayor Suthers, listening to what's going on in our community. I know that. You know, we don't ever want to approach a school with, hey, here's what we're going to do for you, right? So how do we just talk a little bit about the ethos of the Cause I Love Schools initiative and how we just seek to create a conversation with our school partners? Mm-hmm.
The first thing we do is we contact schools in our area, either schools we've partnered with before. They know a little bit about us, and some don't. They've never heard of Cause I Love You before. And we will call and ask what it is that they are seeking to do for their students or their teachers in their schools. And we do listen. We listen to what it is on their hearts. We have principals who are so engaged. And in this COVID season, it's been such an encouragement for principals to know that there are people out there willing to help encourage teachers forward and to do things that, because we know as we encourage the teachers, the students are encouraged, and it goes back into the families and into the communities. So we do go and we listen first, and that is so important. And once we hear what is on their hearts, we can find churches who are capable and organizations who are capable of meeting that need. And that's the fun part for us.
And I think, I mean, you've been on the team now just for a couple of months, but mm-hmm. you've already started to see the benefit of what happens when a church and a business and even maybe a nonprofit, all three kind of work together at
Absolutely.
A local school. You've seen that.
Absolutely. It's so great, because I think, I remember we received a card from one of the local schools we helped gather people around the school. And we received a card, and it said that they were so happy that it wasn't just all talk. It wasn't all talk. They actually got to see the church come together, the community come together around them and actually make something happen. And that is great. That's exactly what we want to do.
So in other words, Cause I Love Schools Day is, that's just an onboarding, that's a platform.
It is.
And it's a way for people to just start that relationship with a nearby school.
For sure. And we want to encourage that connection throughout the year. So we do it on that day, but we want them to check in every so many months or however the church and school decide is a good time. And then they keep that connection throughout the year. And they'll know that perhaps next year we'll do this next project. The next year we'll do that. But when we're connecting schools and communities, schools with the community, they get to see faces and people in their neighborhoods and people even outside of their neighborhoods coming alongside them and supporting the schools. So
this is a great opportunity both for churches and businesses. Can you say one more time the date and how they would get in contact with
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. It's May 1st this year, 2021. It's a Saturday, and we usually work about 4 to 5 hours together. We meet at a local school and all of that. And if you want more information, you can contact me at info@causeiloveyou.com.
That's so great. Well, some of you guys are now introduced to kind of the fuller team here at Cause I Love You with Corey, Dorothea, and myself. And for those of you who have been listening to this the whole episode, just thanks so much for joining us on this very first episode. It's so much fun to have you. We've had a lot of fun introducing ourselves to you. And if you found this episode helpful, then you can do a couple of things. First, you can subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you get your podcast from, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever else. Hit that subscribe button. And then if it's helpful to you, or if you know other people that you feel like this might be helpful to, feel free to pass it along, share it with them. We'd love to just continue to kind of gain some momentum around these conversations. And then third, you can find out more about Cause I Love You at our website, which is www.cosiloveyou.com, cosiloveyou.com. So finally, we look forward to bringing these episodes to you at the beginning of every month. So be on the lookout for our next episode in early April 2021. And we will see you next time on the Cause I Love You podcast.